More and more soccer is creeping into our daily sports lives. You've probably heard about the upcoming World Cup in Brazil on NPR. Even the New York Times has reporters on a dedicated soccer beat. The sport is no longer relegated to, if you were lucky, just a box score buried deep in the sports section. It's quickly becoming big news and big business in the United States. We're going to talk about the rise of soccer, especially here in Cincinnati. First, WVXU's Tana Weingartner has this look at a team you may or may not have heard of.
The Cincinnati Saints and Lady Saints both have home matches this weekend. If you don't know who they are, that's okay. You probably will soon, and that's just fine with owner David Satterwhite.
Nobody's heard of us, really, because we've made it that way, and we didn't want anybody to hear about us until we had our infrastructure built up. Staff, players, teams.
Satterwhite started the Cincinnati Saints in 2009. A few years later, he added the Lady Saints to the fold. Despite the small grassroots approach, he has lofty goals, like seeing a Major League Soccer franchise in town along with the Reds and Bengals.
You know, we've got one of the largest youth systems in the country on a per capita basis, and to not have some form of professional team just doesn't make any sense.
He admits back in 2009, people thought he was crazy.
They thought I was a complete idiot. They really did. And even the soccer people thought I was an idiot.
But he stuck with it and has built up a small but growing fan base.
It just goes to show that, yes, there is a market for it, but it's got to be done properly, and it's got to be done strategically, right? It can't just be forced. You just can't just throw hundreds of thousands of dollars at it and hope it sticks.
Satterwhite's players like his approach. This is goalkeeper Jamie Starr's fourth year with the team.
From a sports perspective, Cincinnati's a major league town. You've got Major League Baseball. You've got the NFL. The Cincinnati Cyclones have been very successful at a minor league level, and I think that's something for the Cincinnati Saints to aspire to. Now, is it going to happen overnight? No, but I think we're willing to put in the work to build a fan base and try and make it grow over time.
Defender James Thomas agrees.
When I was younger, it was a very new sport. A lot of people didn't know even, you know, a lot about soccer. And now, with all the clubs, all the kids playing, it's just grown immensely. And I think the next step, the next progression is definitely to try and get a professional franchise. We've had a few here in town that haven't made it, and I feel like the way this has started building slowly, it definitely gives it an opportunity to last longer.
This spring, the Saints moved from Hyde Park to Stargell Stadium in the West End, just across from Over the Rhine. The supporters group, the Seven Hills Crusaders, fill the stadium with chants and celebratory smoke bombs. Lady Saints midfielder Jen Maslin says she plays for the love of the game, to be a role model, and to continue honing her skills. Like Starr and Thomas, she appreciates the slow growth approach.
We are still very far ahead of where women in other cities are with our soccer leagues. The fact that we have a men's team is actually really helpful because we can kind of follow in their footsteps. So our goal is to get to the level that the men are. So we might be, you know, a couple seasons behind them. They are three seasons older than us. But as they move forward, I think we will as well. And our end goal is just like theirs, is to have the highest level of soccer in Cincinnati for women as well as men.
The Saints actually aren't the only soccer team in town. The Dayton Dutch Lions of the USL Pro League, that's one step below Major League Soccer, extended south this year with a lower-level men's side playing at Xavier University. Business development manager Kuhn Dreesen says the organization has been eyeing Cincinnati for a while.
Well, we know that the Cincinnati market is huge and has a lot of potential. I mean, the academies in Cincinnati they have so many teams there that we already knew in the beginning, if we could start a team over there, it would be a great fit.
3CDC says it's seen the demand for soccer grow as well. The developer is partnering with the Cincinnati Saints to host World Cup viewing parties this summer on Fountain Square. Spokeswoman Brittany Carden says soccer-related requests are more frequent now and increasing in number.
We show the Bengals games on our giant LED board. We show the Reds games. Soccer is the next big thing, so why not? We think it's something that people would really enjoy, you know, and it's different. It's not something that you see every day. I don't know how many folks can go down to their public square in their city and watch a giant professional soccer game or the World Cup.
The World Cup officially kicks off next Thursday. The United States has been drawn into what is not so affectionately known as the Group of Death with Ghana, Portugal, and Germany. The team's first match is against Ghana on Monday, June 16th.
With us to talk about the game's growing popularity and offering a preview before the World Cup are Cincinnati Saints President and CEO David Satterwhite, Jim Martello, Ohio South Youth Soccer President and Chair of the National Championships Committee for U.S. Youth Soccer, and our resident soccer fan in the WVXU newsroom, Tana Weingartner. Hi, Tana.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having us all in here.
Oh, you're welcome. And thanks, Jim and David, for being here this afternoon as well.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number to call, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter.
Jim, let's start with you. You've been in the soccer business here in town for more than 30 years. Let's just start with this. How many kids are playing soccer in the tri-state? Oh, I guess we don't have Jim on the line just at the moment. Mark, I think maybe you need to hit a button there. They're pointing at you.
Hang on just a second.
Are you there, Jim?
Here we are. Jim.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Tell us a little bit about how many kids are playing.
I first got involved in 1978 or so. Our numbers were only about 10,000 players in Ohio South Youth Soccer. And this past year, we finished up with over 61,000 kids playing. So, the growth over that time has been pretty substantial. And one of the better things that's occurring is that the kids that were playing back in the 70s and 80s are now back as parents and their coaching teams and having their kids play with many of the various academies that are in the tri-state area. So the growth has been good. The level of play has increased greatly.
Jim, when I was growing up, you never heard much about soccer. In fact, I really wasn't exposed to it until my youngest son started playing. And he's been hooked on it ever since, and he still plays as an adult. And I'm amazed at how many people are playing the game now at all the various different levels. What do you think caused this surge in popularity?
Well, I think that there was a number of things. First, one of the latest things has been with the professional game with MLS and the programs like the Cincinnati Saints that are getting around the country. MLS has been a great processor, and when we had World Cup in 1994, that was a great time of growth. There was significant people that had first become exposed to soccer and then started to play and enjoyed it even more.
How have people's attitudes sort of changed? You know, what did they see there when you talk to people? How have they changed about the game?
I think that at first it was, again, back in the early times, people didn't know what soccer was all about. They didn't know the rules. They thought the game was a little boring. But now I think that now that they understand the needs of the athletes, what these players have to be conditioned to play at the more competitive levels. But then again, having fun at the recreational level is huge for the sport. Kids just like to go out and have fun. And if we gear our recreational programs to the fun side, I think it helps.
Are you seeing that our kids are sticking with it more, or is it still sort of you play soccer when you're real young, but then you transition to baseball or to American football?
Well, I think it's I like to see kids when they're younger, playing many sports, especially as they're getting up ready to go into high school. I think they should be exposed to the various things. My kids were involved in baseball. They were involved in basketball. I had one that was a swimmer, one was a diver, and plus playing soccer. And I think as you get more into the high school area at that age, that'll be the time you tend to be a little bit more of a specialist and decide, what you want to really put your primary efforts into.
Let's bring David into the conversation here. Talk a little bit about your role, what you see your role, the Saints' role, is in doing all those things that Jim's just been talking about and developing the game.
Yeah, we basically started to fill that void, right? Because we've had kids playing for years and years, and they've never really had a place to kind of aspire to, if that makes sense. Jim had touch base on the MLS. The MLS has done a phenomenal job of, not really my generation because I was just getting out of high school when MLS was coming around, but the kids below me, they've been able to grow up with a sound professional league in this country so that they can aspire to be professionals, and that's why I think you're seeing a lot of kids stay in the game because they have that opportunity at this point. College soccer was the highest level when I was growing up, and that's what I aspired to. So now these kids have a high professional standard to look up to. You've got English Premier League games that are on TV all the time now, where we didn't have that before. So, you know, part of us is being able, you know, kids can't always go to Columbus, or they can't always go to Indianapolis with see the Indy 11 and the Columbus Crew. You know, they can't always travel to see the U.S. national team. So having a local pro team allows them to, you know, see a high-level soccer, you know, in their backyard and be able to aspire and grow to that level. So
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org. And you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And David and Jim as well, if you have a perspective on this, you can weigh in. We know the number of people playing is growing. Is this translating into more fans for the game?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've seen it just with us alone. You know, the way that we've structured our growth and strategically is to, as the generations are growing older, they're having kids, like Jim had mentioned. So I grew up with soccer. I love it. I've got now a 12-week-old and a 2.5-year-old, and they go to all the games, right? So they're learning that it's becoming part of them, and it's a real sport to go watch and what have you. So, you know, just like baseball and football, where grandpas take their grandkids, take their kids to the games, and it's part of their pastime, and that keeps getting handed down by generation. It's starting now with soccer, is that, like I said, I have kids now. I love it. I've played all through the ranks throughout my career, and that's a lot of people that you're seeing that are doing the same. So,
Jim, what's your perspective? You think that the number of people playing is translating into more fans, and as David was pointing out, it becomes a generational thing at some point, doesn't it?
I think the events that we have, both in youth soccer and the events that are now developing in the professional game, are very attractive to spectators. For example, in June in Dayton, Ohio, we're going to be hosting the U.S. Youth Soccer Midwest Regional Championships to bring in the top teams from the 14 states in our region. And the number of people that will be in this marketplace between Cincinnati and Dayton to come to watch soccer, the economic impact gets into the over $10 million. And when we're able to do those events and showcase things like this, I think it's a great aspect for the sport and further develops the growth.
A lot of people say, you know, there's no money in soccer, it's boring, they don't want to watch it. But do you really think that this is an area of growth where there's, you know, a market to be had, to either of you, a market to be had, money to be made, and a team to be supported?
Yeah. Go ahead, Jim.
Go ahead, David.
Yeah, I do. You know, just the fact of there's, like as Jim said, there's so many kids and parents and families involved. You've got to have that base to build off of. Okay. And then as you have that base that continues to grow, yes, there's money in it to support it. It's unique. You know, one of the things that has been a real driving impact across the sport in the last few years are supporter groups. You know, you get your the Seattle Sounders supporter groups. I believe they're called the Emerald City Supporters.
Sounds good to me.
You know, they've broken the world record for the loudest stadium crowd, right?
Louder than the Seahawks, who are there. They play in the same stadium.
Yes, play in the same stadium. Basically the same fans. But yeah, that's the growing trend. That's making it more exciting. You know, that's an atmosphere that you've only ever seen in Europe, okay? And now that's starting to come to the U.S. And that's bringing – it's more of a young professional rather than just kids, right? So you're attracting – a whole different demographic, which all the other professional sports have been going after for years and years and years. So soccer's just now catching up. But without having that base of all the kids playing and all the kids that are growing to love the game, you know, there isn't anything for the Saints or the Crew or the EPL. All that stuff's based on huge community support and growing throughout that way. So
Jim, we had a question from Pete by email, and it sounds like something you might be able to field. He's asking about high schools. Is it easier for a high school to field a soccer team versus fielding a football or a baseball team?
Well, you know, things have changed somewhat in the high school arena as they've gone to a little bit more pay to play. But as far as the ability, the uniform cost, the things like that, are far less for soccer. And the number of players on a squad versus the players on a football team, I think that that is a thing that has helped in the high school game. We see more high schools throughout the state that have picked it up. Very early on, very few high schools played soccer. Back when I was in high school, with, you know, don't want to go back that far.
But, I remember.
That was playing in Cincinnati, and it was because I was at a school where the one of the teachers came in from an area that was somewhat strong in that, so he put together a group of fellows, and they played a little bit of soccer. But there was no other high school to play against. And you can see how it's changed across the various divisions. The girls' soccer has been tremendous in the state of Ohio, and boys' soccer as well. So I think that the sport has done extremely well in the high school ranks.
Jim, what do you think about college soccer? There's been a lot of discussion, especially if you look at Europe. There's not really college soccer. You go straight into an academy, into a professional league team. People have been wondering, are we holding ourselves back by this culture of going to college and playing for a college?
Well, I think that there's a dual impact on that. There's one of the biggest is the education that one gets, you know, of going to college. And I think the college game and, you know, has done reasonably well. It's not absolutely the best as far as development of players, but, you know, how many of these players are really going to go on and end up in the professional ranks of soccer? And to me, you know, getting the education and then being able to play at the college level was very well. I had two boys that were able to play in college, and having the academics, I think, was most important. And then having the aspect of being able to play the sport in college was very good.
But now college, David, turning to you, college ranks really are bolstering your program. A lot of your women and men's team have college experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with Jim 100% that there's a need for it. Now, whether it's the best development for those players on a professional level, only playing 5 months out of the year, where the rest of the world and even our MLS teams are playing 10 months out of the year, that doesn't necessarily help them. But, you know, the education aspect is huge. And, you know, Jim, you know, when we're looking to find players, we have to cast a huge net because we're looking for the top 1% of the players throughout the country, right? So we have to cover as many bases as we possibly can because that one out of the 61,000 kids that, you know, Jim Sain's playing in Ohio South, you know, we've got to cover all that because there may only be one or two that actually get to that professional level. You know, it's just like professional baseball. It's just like professional basketball and football. You've got a very small group that is actually that super talented. So,
All right. Should we turn focus to the World Cup that's coming up?
We should. Now, World Cup, I'm a novice to all this. Comes around every 4 years, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So this
good.
This is comparable to what, the Olympics for these guys?
It's bigger, I would say, probably for their sport.
Well above.
Yeah.
Well above. Okay. So my understanding, from what Tana tells me, is that the U.S. is stuck in the group of death, and that just sounds absolutely horrible.
What do you think about our chances, David?
It's going to be tough. It's probably going to be one of our toughest World Cups, going up against Germany and Portugal and the infamous Ghana, who's knocked us out of the past two World Cups. Even though one of our players is his family's from Ghana, Kwame Sarkodie. So he's
one of the Saints players.
Yeah. He's rooting for the other team, so we won't talk to him during that game. But the thing about the World Cup is that it is everybody gets into it, whether you like soccer or not, if you watch, because the passion that the fans, that the entire country shows for their teams, you cannot find anywhere. It's not like you're playing for your city. You're playing for your country. And overseas, everybody stops what they're doing and they're watching these games. My first taste of it was when the 94 World Cup came in here to U.S. I went up to the Detroit Silver Dome, which I think is no longer really being used now from the pictures I saw the other day. But, I think it holds around 70,000 people, and I was completely blown away. I was a sophomore in high school. Driving in, traffic was backed up 2 miles. Everybody were in buses. We were playing Switzerland, and people were honking their horns, waving their flags, hanging out the buses. It was unreal. I couldn't believe it. I get into the stadium, and I see these massive flags, 70,000 people screaming. When you score a goal in the World Cup, everybody just explodes because it's so much tension building up, waiting for something to happen. And when it does, it's unreal. So it's very exciting, and I can't wait to be on Fountain Square and stuff watching them. So,
and you're right. I'll admit I'm a fair weather soccer fan, but when the World Cup comes around, I'm glued to it. I really enjoy it immensely. There's just something about the energy and the vibrancy of the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's country versus country. That's what you basically got to look at it. When we go up against Portugal, we're rooting against every other Portugal fans, every other Ghana fans, every other German fans. So it's unlike anything else where it's a tournament that you can be called world champion, right? You can't really say that in any other sport, even the Olympics, because it's all amateurs. These are the best players from around the world. Professional, amateur, doesn't matter. You got best of the best playing against the other best of the best.
Yeah, this is an interesting question we got via Twitter. It's not on the World Cup. It's back to the original topic we were discussing. But somebody tweeted that they wanted to know, what role are FIFA PlayStation video games playing in the growth of the popularity of the sport? Maybe, Jim, you can weigh in too if you've seen anything there.
Jim, you want to take that one?
I'm a little removed from that. I really don't know.
I'll jump in. Video games are massive with kids. I played them growing up. I've played FIFA. I think it was FIFA 97, 98, I think, is when I first started playing. I haven't played them recently because I don't have time. But, the fact that you can see your favorite players, it kind of ties you to those players that you never were able to see or be a part of, that you say, oh, I can do this, and I can play with this guy, and you can make your own team. Yeah, that helps. I mean, anything that connects you to the game, that you can recognize the players' names, they become more household names and fan favorites. All that stuff ties back in. So the amount of kids that are playing video games may not help them on the soccer field, but it definitely helps them become a fan.
I guess there could be an argument for strategy there. I don't know. They didn't let me play. I used to get all the best players red carded because I thought it was funny.
Back to the World Cup thing. I attended games. I did attend the opening game over in Chicago with Germany. I did go the next day to the Silver Dome to watch USA. I saw multiple games. And the enthusiasm and the crowds that you see is not duplicated in any other sport.
No.
I also went to the final out in Pasadena, and it was a four-day party out there of fans from all over the world that were in Pasadena watching the final game, plus the largest audience that you have on TV watching this around the world. It's just an amazing collection of games and players.
And I'll just jump in here real fast. We only have a few seconds left, but we did want to make sure everybody knows that Fountain Square and the Cincinnati Saints are going to be hosting viewing parties this summer on Fountain Square for all three U.S. men's national team games. So you can go down there and see them take on Ghana, Portugal, and Germany with everybody across town and cheer on the USA.
Absolutely.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us this afternoon. Cincinnati Saints president.
Thank you.
And CEO David Satterwhite. Also, Jim Martello, Ohio South Youth Soccer President and Chair of the National Championships Committee for U.S. Youth Soccer, and WVXU reporter Tana Weingartner. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's program is Pete Reitmeier, with help from Jim Nolan. The technical director is Kevin Rawinski. I'm Mark Haney.